You're listening to a very special interview edition of Audible Sounds on 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh. That's right, today I'm sitting down with Australian noise artist and experimental turntablist Lucas Abella, also known as Justice Yeldam. But first we got some bin tracks to get through. Here's King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
WRCT is supported by Rita's Italian Ice. Rita's offers a variety of frozen treats, including their Italian Ice, made fresh daily with real fruit. Available in over 95 flavors, Rita's has several locations throughout the city of Pittsburgh, including a stand at 3712 5th Avenue near the University of Pittsburgh campus. For more information, visit their website at ritasice.com. If you are interested in underwriting for WRCT, you can email pr@wrct.org for more information about promotional exchanges and other partnership opportunities. The new and newer music show. Do you like new music and free tickets to shows? If so, you should listen to the new and newer music show every Sunday night from 9 to 11 p.m. Join Peter as he plays your favorite new music and gives away tickets to your favorite bands and artist shows. Listen to the new and newer music show on 88.3 FM, stream at WRCT.org, and follow on Instagram at newshowwrct.
Just keep hanging there.
Stormy weather. Tune in to WRCT Pittsburgh on Fridays at 5 p.m. for a mercurial and stormy mix of indie punk, post-punk, emo, and more. You're listening to a special interview edition of Audible Sounds on 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh. And in reverse order, that was Rough Yuns. No, they're not from New Kensington. With the track Mind Control. Before them, we had Mushroom Tea by Children of the Bong. And at the top of the show, we had King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard with the track Swan Song off of the album Silver Cord. Like I said, today is a special interview episode with my guest Lucas Abella, also known as Justice Yeldhand. I spoke with Lucas last year over Zoom. I asked him about the evolution of his musical process, as well as his experience across the various noise scenes around the world. Here now is my interview with Lucas Abella.
Hello, welcome to yet another Audible interview, and I've sat down with Lucas Abella, also known as Justice Yeldim, calling in from Sydney, Australia. How you doing, Lucas? Do you like Lucas, or do you like Justice?
Lucas is good. I've kind of dropped Justice, just taking on my own name in my old age, I suppose. I don't know, like, Justice is something that came up in the mid-90s. He was a disgraced judge. Like, the original name was Justice Yeldim and the Dynamic Ribbon Device. As I wanted a band name that sounded a bit like Dr. Teeth in the Electric Mayhem, which is my favorite band name of all time. And I also wanted a band name that might get me sued. So I chose Justice Yeldim and the Dynamic Ribbon Device. Justice Yeldim was a Supreme Court justice here in New South Wales. And the Dynamic Ribbon Device is the font for Coca-Cola. So I just want to put those two things together. And in hope of being sued and getting some publicity, but they never sued me and kind of wore out. Then I just dropped the Dynamic Ribbon Device for a while and just was Justice Yeldim for a bit. And I've since dropped the whole thing and I'm just going by Grandpa now because I'm in my old age. I used to think that performing under your own name was pretentious, but I've realized that it's the opposite is true. Like, literally. You're pretending to be somebody else, blah, blah, blah. I've started using my own name and,
I have no further questions. That was amazing. That was I love that cold opening. That was great. Did you actually believe that? What made you think that operating under your own name was pretentious?
I don't know. I just thought, you just think that, like, you know, people who just use their name because when you're younger, I suppose. And I didn't want to come out across as so where you come up with project names and all that kind of thing. But
is it the ostentatiousness of presenting your own name as if it carries so much natural weight? Is that it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, okay. It hindered me. I guess Australians aren't full of gravitas like Americans. We're not really ego driven. Like, ego is considered a really bad thing here. So if you're full of yourself, you often get struck down and called a wanker, so on and so forth. So people here are a lot more unassuming, I suppose. So putting your name up in lights just didn't seem right at the time. So you come up with aliases and so on. Anyway, I kind of got tired of the name after time, and just instead of coming up with it, something new, just thought, yeah, Lucas Abella's a fine sounding name.
Use the one you got.
Use the one you got.
Okay. wanted to, so here on our Audible Sounds, we celebrate the weird and the worldly and the wonderful. For the uninitiated, how would you describe your musical style?
I guess I started as a turntablist, and my music has kind of evolved from that basic premise to the point where I now play a giant piece of glass with my face. So that the two things don't really equate, and it seems quite incredulous to say turntablism, giant piece of glass, but essentially, like, I first played needles, I broke the needles, I took the needles, I replaced them with pins, got the pins, replaced them with swords and knives and skewers.
Okay, can we take a step back? I have some questions. So I actually caught you at 3577 Studios here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. In 2019. And I saw you playing the glass. So how long have you been doing the glass specifically?
The last 20 years now with the glass.
Wow, nice.
I've been for about 30, but for the first 10 years, lots of different experimentations with the turntables leading up to glass, and 20 years of the glass as a signature instrument, I suppose you would call it at this point.
So when you say you played the glass and you played the pins and you played the swords or all the other items, what are you actually doing? Like,
went into swords and knives and things. Eventually, I made turntables out of textures and stuff like that, and I used to play the swords on those things. And then one day I was on tour in Japan, and I rebuilt these motors, and they were too weak, long story short. Anyway, I started putting these implements in my mouth and started vibrating things vocally instead of few grooves or textures. And that, over the course of a few more years, evolved into the glass itself. And I kind of see the glass as a giant diamond tip stylus that I vibrate with my mouth instead of a record groove. So I still think of it as turntablism, even though it's as far removed from turntablism as
you've expanded the definition of turntable.
I guess. But yeah, I vibrate the glass with my lips. It's like, and then I run it through a bank of parallel chains through a modular synthesizer. I guess when I say synthesizer, I should say I'm not using any synthesis. It's all glass and effects. It just happens to be modular gear. I think often people see modular gear and they consider it to be synthetic. But I guess when you saw me in 2009, I was still on the pedals. I only went modular during COVID. They had this weird thing called JobKeeper here where you'd get, if you lost 30% of your income during COVID, they'd give you these 30 grand grants. And my income was like 5 grand, and I dropped 30% of 5 grand, and they gave me 30. So I used that to invest in
Washington. Well, how nice to have a country that cares for the welfare of its citizens in a crisis.
It was a loophole. They closed the loophole. I got it two times in a row. I got 60 grand. And then the next wave of COVID, they shut that loophole down.
Nice.
But I saw a hole and I jumped right through it. Anyway, I got 60 grand.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. I got 60 grand from the government, and I bought this modular setup. Like it's modular as otherwise would be completely unaffordable to me. But as I said, there's no synthesis in what I do. But with modular, as unlike the pedals, I can do two things. I can take my glass signal and run it through effects, but at the same time, I can use the dynamics of my performance and run that through envelope followers and frequency trackers, and I can have my performance also modulate my performance as I'm playing. So basically, I turn my sound into control voltages, which go to all my delays and reverbs and panning and all that kind of thing. And so my performance is, if I'm going up and down in dynamics, is turning the knobs backwards and forwards all throughout the modular setup in kind of unison with my playing. So it's kind of brought the whole thing to another level, because I'm not only affecting my sound, I'm also twisting and turning my sound through my vocal techniques as I play.
What When I saw you in 2019, your set was fairly brief, but you were sweating like crazy, and that just filled me with like respect, because a lot of people don't really appreciate this type of music. So my next question is, how did you discover this kind of music? What does it do for you when you what are you trying to convey with your sound?
I guess I'm a big adherent to physical performance. I'd like everything to come from me. Like a lot of noise music is ghost in the machine. Like the Rattlebox set something up and then they just all goes out of control and they just turn parameters and stuff. But I like the source sound to come through me, and I like it if I stop being physical, the sound drops away. No matter how much I augment it from there, and it can be quite dissimilar to the original sound source, but as long as it's physically coming through me, it's quite important. I get the performing gets me high. It's a drug I really enjoy. I can't get that feeling any other way. Probably when you saw me sweating, that's probably what it was. I guess I know performances prior to the modular setup were very short. I've got to admit they've got longer. Something about COVID changed a lot of things about what I do, not just my workflow, but I guess prior to COVID, I never rehearsed. I only ever performed in front of people, and then during COVID, I had to start streaming performances, and I didn't think what I did worked. I was feeling the same. I think like part of what I do relied on volume and right on the space itself, because I kind of physically play the space as well. It really the room interacts with the glass in a lot of ways, and all this elements were missing when I tried to perform over Zoom or whatever it was, some the Twitch, I can't remember. Anyway, what was I trying to say? So because I never rehearsed, I started rehearsing at home with this new stuff, and now I play at home quite often, which is re really weird for me. So I'm also playing I think more musically than I used to. I used to do parallel chains with my effects, like basically one chain for bass, one chain for treble, just splitting the signal up. And I ended up before I, the end of my pedals, I end up splitting up into six different chains with the pedals, which when someone said to me, "You're just trying to do modular with pedals," which is kind of sprang the whole idea. But now I'm doing eight stereo chains, all from the same source. So there's not only like you're basically making your own accompaniments as well. So it sounds like there's a lot happening at once, but it's all coming from the one place, but it's spread out and all different things are happening to it. And then it's all cut, it's siphoned into this stereo or sometimes quadraphonic separation. So essentially what I do, I make a little sound with it. Like some people think I shout or scream into the glass, which is not at all what happens. It's more
It doesn't sound like you're screaming.
I know some people have described it like that, it's a more very subtle sound source that's kind of exploded through the effects processing stage. So it's I like making small sounds big.
Can I ask about the glass? Is there a uniform shape you use? You ended your show by breaking it over your head, so I assume you mass produce these.
No, I just get any glass I find on the street, and I typically cut them into triangles because they've got a good standing wave. Like when the sound travels through the triangular shape, it seems to, I don't know, it seems to vibrate well. I don't know. But yeah, I'll play any glass. I usually get it. When I was first touring, I'd find it before a show. I'd get to a venue, then start scouring the local neighborhoods, trying to find something, bring it back, play it. But these days, not as helpful ever, and sometimes I get promoters to find it for me. Sometimes I still go searching for it, but more often than not, like I get a piece of glass, I cut it on sight, and then I play it, then I smash it. I rarely play the same piece twice. At home, I play the same bit over and over, but on tour every night, it's a new piece.
Awesome. The vibe in that room, 3577 Studios, was amazing. You could really feel the physicality that you were describing. And the room, everybody was really vibing with it. Not a lot of people appreciate noise scenes because I think that lends a lot to the appeal that you were describing.
Hmm. Was there a question in that?
That was not a question. That was just a comment. Sorry. But that being said, I noticed on your Instagram that you posted footage of being on WFMU a while back. Do you come to Pittsburgh a lot?
I've been to Pittsburgh maybe 3 times, I think. I was planning to come there again this year, but it fell through. But I'll probably be coming through around June next year, I think, at this stage.
Oh, fabulous. Where are some of your favorite places to go? Like, who has the best scenes for this type of music?
Oh, God, who knows? I'll travel and play anywhere. I don't think anywhere has a better scene. Like I find the American scene interesting because, unlike say Australia or Europe, there's less arts funding in general. So you find that the network in America runs on the smell of an oily rag. You know, And culturally, that's interesting to me because it's not poisoned by the well of arts funding. So like, people don't change or pander what they do to become more sophisticated or intellectual about the noise. It's far more subcultural.
And that's interesting.
Yeah, like with experimental music, there's always been two. There's the academic and then there's the subcultural. And I come from the subcultural. I was a teenage goth who got into noise through things like Einstein de Neubauten, which I discovered through Nick Cave, and obviously those tangents, and then discovered noise. So, and then there's, I know, like, and I feel subcultural musical movements are far more organic and authentic in their output than the academic, in my opinion, which seem just, I don't know, like they probably have better reasons for doing what they do on paper, but the results are bland, while we don't have good explanations for what we do on paper, but we pour from our hearts, you know, like and I think the American noise scene is far more subculturally relevant as an underground, and the way it exists as a network and as a scene, unreliant on much government funding. I know I hear every once in a while of a venue here or there in a more progressive city that gets a bit of money to pay performances, but I've never heard of many US artists getting large amounts of money from the government to do what they do.
Not in my experience, no. That was enlightening. I didn't know. I never thought of it that way. My next questions were, I just was going to ask about your latest project, and anything else you had in the works, and then wanted to ask I ask everybody, is there any other artist that you think needs to be platformed? Like, we try to highlight more obscure people we feel deserve to kind of be taken notice of.
What I'm doing at the moment, I'm working on some recordings with, I had troubles with a visa, so I was meant to be in LA recording an album at the moment, but because I couldn't. I'm doing this recording project with Zach Hill, where I was going to have his drumming control the parameters of my modular rig. So instead of recording his drumming and me jamming with his drumming's converted into control voltage, and his drumming modulates my sound. But we couldn't get together as soon as we wanted. I might be there in November to do the recording, but at the moment he sent me some samples of his drumming, and I'm just working on techniques for that at home. As far as people to champion, I really love what Vic Shenny's doing. I'm sure you've probably come across her, Victoria Shen.
Yep.
And there was someone else out of Boston called Pleasure Coffin that I was meant to play with in New York on the tour that got cancelled, whose videos intrigued me. And yeah, the two things I'm kind of into at the moment. There's a band out of Melbourne called Wet Kiss I really liked, but they moved to Berlin.
Oh,
I can't think of anything else off the top of my head. I'm kind of, in a lot of ways, I'm removed from the scene. I'm like I'm a father of a 6-year-old. My life is very small at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the primary caregiver, so after this, I'm going to go pick him up. And then I basically spend every day with him. And I just, while he's at school, I get to make a little bit of music. I rarely go out anymore. I haven't toured properly since 2019. If you know what it's like. It's like, you know, he's just started school. So I'm just kind of coming out of this fog of parenting where I'm just trying to realign myself with everything that used to be a daily occurrence for me 6 years ago. And hopefully we'll get back into the rhythm and rhyme of you know, going out at night.
have you exposed your child to any of your music?
Oh yeah. He used to love it. He's getting a bit more finicky about it, I guess. Like I think he tells me stupid, but I don't know. I think he likes it. He likes to play with me. He likes to get in my head.
Nice. All right. Well, that's all the questions I had. Thank you so much for meeting with me, Lucas. It's been lovely chatting with you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you next time you're in town.
Thanks for having me, and thank you.
And that was my interview with Lucas Abella. We still have some time left, so it only seems right that we go out with some music of his. This next track is off of his latest release, which can be found on Bandcamp under Lucas Abella or Justice Yeldham. Thank you.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section, when Dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets. Anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
We'll be right back.
Thank you all so much for listening to Audible Sounds. Before we go, just a reminder that you can catch the show every Thursday at 4 p.m. right here at 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, this is Eric Harrison coming to you with a heart full of gratitude on WRCT Pittsburgh. Rock on, Yinzers.
Demander le